This is Beyond a Reasonable Doubt with your hosts, Mark Garagus and Gary Smith.
You know, my father used to have an expression, Gary. It was when somebody said they were sick, he'd say, get sick on the weekends.
Yeah.
Gary apparently subscribes to that, because for those of you who mock him in the comments, and I read those comments, I'm coming for you. Gary does feel a little under the weather, but he did not want to deprive the viewers or the fans of a show.
The show must go on. So if I duck out at some point, then that's why. But we'll soldier on.
You want to show the bucket? I thought it was a bucket of corn, but apparently,
got a bucket. It's just in case. The bucket.
He's not dipping. E. Jean Carroll case today.
Yep.
Apparently, they put on a witness. Do you have her name, Gary?
Yeah.
Testified. Now, mind you, we had talked in one of the previous shows about so-called fresh complaint witnesses, which, well, how do you have a fresh complaint if you don't know when the time was or when the attack was? So it's not that. This is a witness to say that he has a common scheme or modus operandi. And the name was, do you have the name, Gary? It's a female.
One of them is Lisa Birnbach, but I think there were two, let me see here. Long time. Lisa Birnbach was the friend who she called. Let me find the name of the other person here.
Yeah. The other was the person, as I believe it testified, was on a flight, testified that, Trump had,
she was invited to first class.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Obviously,
her name was Jessica Leeds.
Yeah, apparently not flying on Trump Air.
No,
so it's a commercial flight. I've seen arguments going both ways. Some of them is, why should that come in? That's not relevant. Where's the corroboration? The problem with asking where the corroboration is that you are basically asking them to play the Access Hollywood tape about when you're famous, you could grope or grab them by the pussy or whatever you want.
Right.
So that is in there. I will tell you that people are split, at least in some terms, as to the reporting on what is happening in the courtroom. It is, at least, I haven't been in the courtroom, but what has been reported, and Joe Tacopino, who's defending Trump, has got an uphill battle here. And I'll tell you, number one, you're in New York. There's no love lost for Donald Trump in New York, number one. Number two, he's in Scotland. It has become, there were pictures of him shoveling dirt at a groundbreaking. I always fear for that. I always want my clients to be there. At the, even when the jurors are deliberating, you want the jury to see that it's as important to the client as it is that you're requiring the jurors to show up. So that's an uphill battle. The judge has apparently been in Tacopino's cross-examination on a number of occasions. I saw one commentary, if you will, by Mitch Hepner, who is an accomplished lawyer, who had said that there was 5 minutes of very good cross-examination, but his characterization was that it was drowning in a 8-hour sea of meandering. I don't know that that's always the case, because sometimes when you're trying a case, what can seem as meandering, you may later tie up or loop back up. And so until you've seen the whole case, you can't really characterize it that way. However, there were some things and some points that I think were scored. But like I said, I still, when you don't have a client, you've got these allegations, it really is an uphill battle.
So if you're reading the tea leaves, how does this Where do we come to a stop on this? I mean, what do you think?
It's a civil case. When you're fighting about money, the standard is not beyond a reasonable doubt. So it's just basically kind of on the scales of justice. You just a little bit more proving your case, if that's the case. So far, it sure seems like he's behind. And I use that term meaning that it is somewhat of a horse race in a civil case. And it would appear that at this point he is behind. It's always tough to handicap it if you're not in the courtroom to watch jurors' reactions. If the judge is admonishing the defense lawyer, Tacopino, is what's been reported, or if he's commenting on certain things. One of the comments that he made before was giving that Tacopino was complaining about was that the judge was giving context to the name of the book that E. Jean Carroll wrote, and there was a literary allusion, and he didn't like the fact that that the judge supported that. I think that that is never going to get you gain any ground with the judge on that, but that's where we are. We'll give you an update on Friday. Another case that we'll have a lot more about on Friday, the trailer came out today. We're not plugging it, but I'll explain on Friday why I think it's important, is the Melendez case. For those of you who've watched us over the last 10 years, you know that Adam specifically has talked about this case for years. The two sons who were convicted and sentenced to life without parole for killing their parents. And Adam does a riff about Natalia and Sonny, usually has Natalia as the ringleader.
Yeah.
And Sonny going along. But that Adam is not afraid that this would ever be repeated, and that he would have blamed at that point himself to some degree. To what did he do? Well, for those who aren't in the weeds, the first case was a hung jury. Never should have been, in my humble opinion, never should have been retried, but it was retried. The second time around, the judge excluded much of the evidence about the abuse. And the DA who tried it the second time around, I knew he's no longer alive, David Conner. I tried jury trials against David, and he was a very effective prosecutor. I referred to him in real time, so I'm not talking about him after he's passed. He was just an automaton. He was always on a mission as a DA. Don't bother me with anything else. And that was kind of how he ended up getting the conviction on Melendez, by basically mocking their defense that they were abused. Well, this caught my eye, and we'll explain more on Friday why. Play the little clip of a documentary on Peacock that's coming out, I think today, drops today.
Jose Menendez and his wife Kitty, they were shot 8 times at close range.
The infamous Menendez brothers.
The brutal murder of their own parents.
These Puerto Rican children are Latin America's stardom.
I thought that there was some sort of connection. Jose Menendez was obsessed with the band Menudo.
It's time for the world to know the truth.
This is the testimony that Eric and Lyle needed when they were sentenced to life.
Are you ready to tell all the details? Because they're very shocking.
Yes.
He is the key to getting action even after all these decades.
I know what he did to me in his house.
So now, if it appears, as it does from the documentary, that you now have evidence that, in fact, there was a third party, all of the diminishing and exclusion of evidence that related to that would have clearly come in. Because, by the way, in the first trial, at least half of the jurors wanted to find for manslaughter, not for murder, because it was an imperfect self-defense.
And what would manslaughter have? I mean, would they still be in jail if they had been convicted of manslaughter?
No, they would. They've been in for 33 years, so it really is quite an injustice. And like I said, we'll talk more about it on Friday. The last case we're going to talk about is Lori Vallow, and this is the there's a nickname for her, the doom and gloom cult.
Yeah, she's the doomsday mom, I believe I've seen her called. She and her husband, I guess, subscribe to a church that has very extreme beliefs about, you know, doomsday and prepping and stuff like that.
Yeah, then there was evidence yesterday. They had a forensic come up and say that on the they found the kids. It's a horrible story.
It's awful. It's really bad. Yeah, I know the DNA expert that you're talking about, who basically said that they found some duct tape, and the duct tape that had been used in the murder of the children contained at least one piece of Lori Vallow's hair, and she testified that the chances of it being someone else were 1 in 71 billion, I believe.
Having done the cross-examination, that's when they have the hair, they generally do mitochondrial DNA, and that goes through the maternal line, and they can get pretty accurate. That piece of information was called a bombshell. I don't know why the defense didn't challenge. The defense was challenging more the collection of it. That, to me, is a perfect example of transference. I mean, obviously, you're going to, if you have kids, your DNA, your hair, your saliva, things of that nature are going to be on the kids. Fibers are going to transfer. What I thought was interesting, though, is they introduced some evidence about tracking the one of the other people that potentially they have argued was the actual person who killed the kids. Now, they didn't do it by cell phone triangulation. What they apparently did is had one of the phones that's got the GPS implanted chip in it, so they could actually get the GPS down to within 3 feet to 6 feet. And they tracked this person, and that evidence to me was amazing and compelling, and kind of tracked to where the prosecution's theory was with almost laser-like precision.
Wow, that's interesting. We haven't seen that before.
Yeah, that's something that's developed and that you're going to see a lot more of, I guarantee you, in the cases ahead. Anyway, Gary, you've made it to the end of the show. You haven't used the popcorn bucket. I wish you well. Go get some rest, and I'll see you on Friday.
Thank you, sir. I'll talk to you then. And thank you so much for your time, as always. Bye-bye.
Thank you. Bye-bye.
Thanks for listening to Reasonable Doubt. Subscribe on YouTube at youtube.com/ReasonableDoubt Podcast.